It's the herb at the end of the world. It's the herb at the end of the world. It's the time I took some time to heal.
It's time
I took some time to heal.
It's time
I took some time to heal. And I feel fine. Kind of. Hey y'all, Samwise here. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Herb at the End of the World. I'm excited about this week's episode. We're interviewing Renee Rivera, who is a beloved Dharma teacher and plant nerd, fellow plant nerd. And yeah, excited to share this episode about mugwort and the power of decalcification with that plant. Just want to let you know that there's some beeping that is happening in the episode, and that is because there's some construction happening outside of Renee's apartment. So hopefully not too distracting. If you hear it, it's subtle, and it's not you. It's the episode. So despite that, I think it's a really great episode, and I'm excited to share it with you. And here you go. Welcome to the Herb at the End of the World podcast about love and plants and revolution, in particular the kind of revolution that's like subtle and can happen within us at any moment. And I am so excited to introduce two really good friends today. One is Renee Rivera, a community Dharma teacher and mugwort aficionado. Renee is a really, really wonderful, grounded, authentic teacher that shines at the East Bay Meditation Center and at Spirit Rock, and is a really important and beloved teacher in the queer and trans community. And I had the pleasure of sitting with Renee recently at retreat, and it was such an important blessing and so revitalizing to my queer spirit to be able to sit in the guidance of Renee's teachings that come from his experience. So thanks for joining us, Renee.
Thank you, Sam, for having me on. And I'm so delighted to get to like intersect Dharma and plant wisdom, you know, just to like be in that space of thinking about how those things might intersect. I have been studying the Dharma and practicing in the Dharma for over 15 years, and also have been really like learning from plants a lot in the last 10 years or so. And, but I don't usually think of those things in the same space. So just being invited into this and introduced like that, I was like, oh, this is so exciting.
Yeah. So, I'm excited too. Thank you so much for, that exploration. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to talk about mugwort, which is a plant full of spirit and just a really wonderful, useful friend creature that we both love. So I'm really excited to introduce that friend. Just have like a few words about mugwort as a plant in case folks don't know it. It is in the Artemisia family, a common one that most folks know is Artemisia vulgaris. It likes to grow on the edges of streams and like kind of, it likes to have its little toes wet. So like banks of streams, sandy, silty soils, and, it has a lot of medicinal properties and spiritual properties. It's a bitter, so it's helpful for the digestive system, which we'll talk about. It's a nervine, so it's calming. It's helpful for depression. It's an emmenagogue, meaning like it helps stimulate bleeding in people with ovary or people with uteruses. Hepatoprotective, so like helpful for liver, helpful for stimulating and like easing gallbladder issues. It can be diaphoretic, meaning like helpful for fevers, like helping to sweat it out. Diuretic, meaning like helps you pee if you gotta pee and like release excess fluid. It's also helpful as an antiviral, for particularly for like herpes simplex 1 and 2. It's like a vermifuge, which means it's helpful for worms and parasites. I found it to be particularly useful against fleas on my cat in apple cider vinegar. Antibacterial, antifungal, and if you use it in as like an emmenagogue, potentially like an abortifacient. So it's a really amazing, useful plant, and it also has a lot of connotations with Artemis, and it's like, and the archetypes of the goddess. So I'm hoping we get to talk a little bit about that too. That's a little intro on some of the, like, the medicinal words in herbalism that we use for it. But we can read these things in books and be like, okay, yes, koalagog, you know, this is like a word in herbalism we use to talk about like the gallbladder. But it's like a different thing when you have a lived experience, and I'm really grateful to be able to talk to you, Renee, about your lived experience with this plant. So I'm wondering if you would share a little bit of your story with us.
Cool. Yeah. And it's great to hear all that, because like I have some things I know about mugwort that I've gotten to know through experience and reading, but then I just learned a whole bunch of new things that I didn't know about it. So that's very exciting. And the one thing I would add to my understanding of the use and history of the plant is that I think that it has a connection also in the history of brewing beer in particular, or ales, I should say, and that the word wort in mugwort refers to, it's like the mix of grains and herbs that you cook up and then strain to then ferment for beer. So I think that that's, that even the word mugwort refers to the brewing process and it having been used in many places, actually all around the world, not just like, I think that word comes from England, but that it's also used in other cultures. Actually, I was just reading, there's a good, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the book, Healing and Sacred Herbal Beers by Stephen Bunner.
Oh, so good.
Yes.
Yes.
So I think that might have been where I kind of came across this intersection of brewing and mugwort, and he gives a recipe for mugwort ale in that book. But anyway, yeah, that the word itself in the English language refers to its properties as a bitter in making ale. Mm. And I was also saw something in that book as well about like that it was used in Japan. So just like it's not, you know, that's another piece of its, how it's been used over probably, you know, millennia, if not tens of thousands of years. So just in terms of my own story with mugwort, maybe about 10 years ago, I started having really severe gallstone attacks or gallstone transits. The first time I had one, it was so, like, it was like the sudden onset of pain, so intense, like I was literally knocked to the ground by it and thought I was having a heart attack. Like, I just didn't know what this incredibly intense pain was. Like, I went to the emergency room and, you know, I was like, nothing's wrong with you. And that was like my first inkling that I may have had gallstones. And so I went through a period of time when I was having very intense gallstone attacks and, you know, like going to my doctor and getting very little information about, even though my understanding is that gallbladder surgery is one of the most common surgeries in the U.S. Western medicine knows next to nothing about the gallbladder.
They're like, why do you even have that? Let's just take it.
Let's just take that thing out. But I'm like, no, I'm sure it's there for a good reason. you know, and learning a little bit more. The gallbladder is like super important because it helps your body break down fat, which is an essential thing that our bodies need. And yeah, so you don't get any information about what the consequences of taking your gallbladder might be. And like my primary care doctor was basically trying to like scare me into doing the gallbladder surgery. He's like, what if you're at Machu Picchu and you have a gallstone attack and you're going to die, right? I'm like, well, I have no plans to go to Machu Picchu. And like, I just think, let's not rush into this. Let's do some investigation. Anyway, so I was also seeing an acupuncturist, and he taught me how I could actually use moxa, which is, I believe, made from common mugwort, used very, very commonly in traditional Chinese medicine, to basically apply the heat of the moxa stick to my gallbladder and bile ducts as I was having a gallstone attack. And I was able to get the gallstones to pass much more quickly. Like, I had one gallstone attack that lasted 12 hours, which actually caused me to have hepatitis, because you can't have your bile duct blocked for 12 hours without consequences to your liver. And then if it goes on beyond that, then you have consequences to your pancreas, which could actually be fatal. So it is a very serious thing to like live with these gallstone transits, because they literally actually can result in death if your bile backs up into your pancreas. So just to say, like, it's not something to mess around with, but at the same time, I was working with an acupuncturist, and he was able to just help me treat myself in the middle of a gallstone attack. And so that I was able to get the stones to like move through the bile duct in like 15 to 30 minutes, which is really good. And so then I was able to sort of manage the gallstone attacks when I had them, and then start to investigate like, oh, what are things that I can do to actually make my gallbladder healthier, and like look at my diet, work with other herbs, like dandelion is really a good one. Some other traditional Chinese medicine herbs. One that I found that was very effective is called gold coin grass. And I had an incredibly hard time even finding out information about healing the gallbladder because the surgery is so common. So anyway, I was working with moxa, and then also because I was interested in herbs and out foraging and gathering herbs a lot for brewing, because I also do brewing, I started gathering California mugwort and making an infusion. So I would do like a, you know, maybe about an ounce of dried mugwort in a quart of hot water, and I would just drink that whole thing. Or if I had to like go somewhere and I was worried about having a gallstone attack, I would just take a quart of this mugwort infusion with me and drink it all day. And I found that doing the infusion also really minimized the pain that I would have when I would have a gallstone attack. And it just made it, again, it was one more thing that just helped me to manage through the worst of the gallstone transits, while it, you know, I kind of took over a year or two, you know, a lot of different measures through diet and other herbs to an acupuncture to heal my gallbladder. And then, you know, now I just I haven't had an attack in years, and my gallbladder, you know, I haven't had a ultrasound in a long time, so I don't know if it's clear of gallstones, but for sure it's like doing all the stuff it needs to do. It's like, it's feeling fine, it's making bile, it's helping me break down fat. I get to keep my gallbladder doing all the super important stuff that it does. So,
yay.
Yeah. So
you
I just
still
really
have it.
Still have it. Such a victory. And I did change my primary care physician because I was so frustrated. I'm at Kaiser, and I got another one, and he was like, the first time I met with him, he was like, yeah, you know, we just don't know that much about the gallbladder. And I was like, thank you for saying that. Now we can work together, you know. So that's my mugwort story. And I just, yeah, have so much gratitude for mugwort, because I feel like without mugwort, I wouldn't have been able to kind of get through this incredibly painful, difficult period to be able to, you know, have the room to really heal. So it was sort of my first and best intervention in that process.
Yeah, it really strikes me that it took you a while to do that kind of journey. Like you're saying, like a year or two to like kind of go through the arc of that. I'm wondering, right. Like, you know, what else changed for you in that time? You know, because it's like what I really like about healing with plants is it's not only working on the symptom, right, that you're working with, but like especially for something like gallstones, like so much else has to change in your life to meet that. Like you're talking right. about like changing your diet and like just like changing things and just like wondering like what were your dreams like in that time, because mugwort's also like a dream plant, and like how did your life change through that process?
Right. You know, it's interesting because I actually think that the gallstones, I mean, this is my understanding, and you know, I don't, in a way it's mysterious, but I felt like the gallstone, right? Like my gallbladder was already very unhealthy, right? And it had these gallstones in it. The point at which my body decided to start moving them out, my feeling is that I was already in a place of healing when that happened. Like it was a time when I was changing a lot of things in my life. Like really changing what I was doing with my career, changing. It was during that period that I ended a long-term relationship. There were a whole bunch of ways and I was getting healthier. And my sense is that my body was like, all right, we're getting healthier. We're kicking these gallstones out. And, you know, if from Western medicine's point of view, that is the disease. But I don't believe that to be true. Like, I believe that my body was in a healing process that involved this very painful kind of healing process.
Yeah.
Which then I had to find a lot of ways to support. And that went on for a period, you know, as I said, like about a year and a half of really having to focus, like nothing like gallstones to make you focus on your body and healing. And what does my gallbladder need? What does my liver need? How can I get healthier here? How can I really be taking care? I mean, ultimately it was like, how do I really take care of my liver? Because that was a lot of the kind of stagnation and calcification in the gallbladder, I think was the result of long time liver stagnation. So, which is also on an emotional perspective, that could be like stored up anger or just paralysis. So I feel like it is very much related into me sort of shaking up things in my life that I needed to shake up. And then my body being like, all right, we're clearing some of this out. We're clearing out stagnation. We're clearing out calcification.
Yeah. Such a purge.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Thank you for sharing that with me. Cause especially like the idea of focus, I find interesting. Cause I use like a plant-based oracle deck in my spiritual practice. And mugwort in that deck is focus.
Interesting.
And it's about, yeah, so it's about, like, there's poems that go with each card. And this one's poem references the deity, Diana or Artemis, who's an archer. And so it's talking about, like, the focus of, like, pulling back the bow and that moment of breath. Between pulling back the bow and releasing the arrow. And so, and also, yeah, I really resonate with what you're talking about with, like the issue isn't necessarily the gallstones. The issue is like the stagnation in the liver and the calcification. And I really think about calcification in relation to white supremacy and like how our culture is structured. And particularly just like being so repressed, and like our movement and our expression, particularly of like anger, especially people who are like socialized to not have anger. Yeah. And like just that, I think about that in connection to the deity of like Artemis, because I'm just thinking about the trajectory of history of like moving away from like our expression as like beings, as animals, as like creatures that are, you know, supposed to be interwoven with the world around us, but then like this history of like tamping that down and it becoming like the anger and the expression and the like the fluidity of that expression becoming calcified. And then yeah, and then you already on your healing journey, like getting like putting yourself in a position to access more healing, then coming into this place of decalcification, and then having this plant right. connected to this deity of wild animals and like the unowned. Like sometimes people say in connection with Artemis, like, oh, she was the like the deity of virgins, but like virgin as a word back in the day meant like unowned by men. Right. And
it was a word of power also. It was about women's power, right?
Yeah.
And also it's like don't fuck with Artemis because
don't fuck
like,
with Artemis.
The story of Acheron. Of Acheron, is that his name? Who was the guy who like wandered upon her bathing? And she turned his own hounds on him, and he was
torn apart
by his own hounds. I love that story.
I also love that story. And, you know, I feel like that story's a little tamped down, you know, like, and, you know, in terms of like, you know, came upon her bathing, probably like back in the day when it was told as like more entertainment or like whatever, like probably had like more like violent underpinnings, you
right,
know?
Right.
And so like her, like, yeah, that fierceness of like turning that violence like against itself is really inspiring. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like we could, I mean, that story is like ripe to be brought back right now.
Oh yeah. You know, many of things. Yeah.
As we're talking about Me Too and rape culture and all that, let's like bring some really fierce, like that's a great fierce story. About
totally and the wildness like
antidote
that's
to rape culture
the embodiment, the wildness, which I also think there's like a gentleness in there too, you know, because like deer and like are really associated and just like the wildness to be both that fierceness and that gentleness of the interconnectedness of all things that like, you know, we can observe in like other creatures. But there's a lot about that, like the stories of those deities and like the energy that I'm like, oh, I'm kind of here to transmit some of that in the world. Especially like how like Artemis, which is, you know, just one name for an archetype of like the great mother, like a great goddess or like a great entity that is like profoundly both like compassionate and also just really connected to cycles of death and rebirth. The Artemis in particular, like Artemisia, is connected to queer folks. And I have been reading this book. It's called Witchcraft and the Gay Counterculture. I forget the author. I should have had it right here so I could have like looked at it.
Yeah.
The author kind of like went off the rails towards the ends of his life. But the text itself is like a really interesting exploration of history and kind of following like the role of queer people over time and kind of like getting back into or like kind of trying to touch on the threads of like what we did for our communities in different times all over the world. And that's like people who are connected to spirit, who are in the in-between realms, who act as like healers and like community, like spiritual leaders. And there's like in this book, one of my favorite parts is it talks about the great, like amazing mass, like orgies and like sex rituals that are also connected to Mugwort in the sense of like that beer and that brewing that you're talking about, like those recipes and those preparations of those herbs, like had an important part in those rituals. And I think that's part of why it was banned. So when the church was like, actually, you know what? You can only have hops. Hops is a nice sedative. Yes. It's estrogenic. It's going to make your libidos chill out. It's going to make you sit the fuck down.
It's an aphrodisiac. You know, it actually suppresses sexual arousal.
Right. Which is like, totally the different direction than mugwort, which is like a very wild moon plant, dream-driven, wild bitter, releasing your anger. But I have a dream story about mugwort that I'd love to share with you. In school, when I was at Ancestral Apothecary, they were like, okay, mugwort is like a very powerful dream plant, and it's not like you can work with it to have dreams that are not necessarily comfortable, but it's like the dream that you need to have in order to continue on your path or your journey or your healing journey. Like kind of like what you're describing of like this, like releasing of these calcification is not pleasant in any way, but it's like something that needs to happen in order to continue the journey. And so I was like, cool, I'm not going to mess with that. I'm going to I'm going to leave that alone because I just don't feel ready to engage with that energy. And I went to like a permaculture like cob building workshop up in the north of the state, and my friend who was there was like, I transplanted some mugwort like up near the creek, do you want to like take a little bit with you and take it back to your tent and dream with it? And I said, no thank you. I was just like, no thanks. And so I went about my day, and I came back to my tent at was just on this little like wooden platform in the middle of this field at the end of the day. And my friend had been doing something else, but there on like right on the edge of the platform was like a little torn off piece of mugwort. And I was like, okay, all right. hey you in, mugwort. So I took it into my tent, and there's like a little tent, there's a little pocket for like stuff in the tent, and it just happens to hang like right above my face. Uh-huh. So I took this little piece of torn off leaf, and I put it in the little pocket above my face, and I dreamt with it. And I did have a really intense dream about violence. And particularly like about my like father being violent towards me. And what really struck me in the dream was like really recognizing and knowing the felt impact of that violence, like knowing that it is real, like in the sense of like, I have known this feeling and the sensation of like violence and degradation for a long time, like maybe longer than I have been embodied in this body. And just like the betrayal of that really came through, because the dream was also about like, we were all under house arrest, like martial law, and the police were coming to forcibly install surveillance, like a little Alexa's in everybody's house. And I wanted to resist, and my father said no, and like kind of gave into it. And then when I tried to resist him, like then there was violence. And so, and I woke up and I was like, just really struck with the grief of that, and like finally recognizing that as like real and not made up, you know, just like understanding the legacies of that violence in our line and how that's made me feel, and allowed me to tap into this anger that I wasn't safe for me to tap in directly to for a long time. And then I was able to be with that. And then when I came out of that retreat, or not retreat. I mean, it was essentially a retreat from the world. We had no service or anything like that. We were just building all day. Mm-hmm. When I came out of the, back into service, I had a text message from my father asking for forgiveness.
Oh, wow.
So it was like unprovoked from, you know, like I had not, we had not been really been speaking, but like it was just, mm-hmm. it was just spirit.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, and it was so a big turning point for me and like, yeah, in my healing in that way. And it felt, yeah, like an important, deeply disturbing, uncomfortable dream, but right. I am grateful that I had it.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I'm kind of thinking also about this kind of this theme of decalcification also of like, I mean, I was thinking of actually meditation retreats that I've been on that were focused on the practice of loving kindness, which is also called metta in Pali, which is the language of the Buddha. And on some of those retreats, I have had the most violent dreams. So I was just like reminded of some dreams that I've had. And it's like, there's a, like you're, luckily they warn you, like if you do this practice, you're going to have some kind of purification of often of violence in the mind, like sometimes really violent thoughts or images arise or very violent dreams. And just thinking of the way, like that's another piece of whether it's trauma or just experiences or the culture that we're in that just lives in our bodies, and that that arising, like I'm just thinking as you're talking about this dream, like it's another place of like, the, you know, the healing can manifest like that, whether it's in our minds or our bodies, like in that kind of healing crisis or having these, you know, those kinds of dreams or imagery coming out. And I just thinking like, as we go through a collective process of, I'm just thinking of how like this decalcification relates for me to decolonization. You know, as we're like decolonizing our minds and our bodies, like we are going to go through a lot of purging one way or another. You know, it's like, I feel it just in my own journey and my own process. I'm finding that often it is feeling like places that are hardened or calcified in my body are getting broken down. And that is often violent and painful.
Feels like,
you
it.
Know, whether yeah. it's in the mind or in the body. You know, we don't, we're not going to decolonize without, or decalcify without like these kinds of episodes of pain, of having those toxic parts of our experience or minds come to the surface.
Totally.
I don't know if that relates at all for you. With oh, the dream, for sure. But that was what was coming up for me in my oh, own yeah. process.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I've also been thinking about in relation, you know, I love this thread of like decalcification and decolonization. I've been thinking a lot about like de-domestication, you know, and because I'm, you know, doing this study of my history as like a settler and then like as someone of like Germanic and French and Celtic-y lineage. And being like, okay, like, so where did this energy of like war and of mm-hmm. like colonization come from? And, I, you know, in many ways, you know, it's hard to say exactly. And I think, that the phenomenon of like greed and grasping is quite human, as far as I understand it, is like the craving and the grasping towards something like, you know, Buddhism talks about that. And, you know, especially when those energies gain like power and fueled by fear, that can be incredibly destructive. And I just, I'm like, you know, where should I begin to undo, you know, if I'm in this process of decalcification and it's like, oh, like that violence begins at least in, as far as I can tell in my lineage, like in the domestication of like of other creatures and also of ourselves, like, and just thinking about how one would, like, you know, domesticate an animal or like a plant. There's some violence in terms of like making it do what you force, rather, I think is a more accurate term. And yeah, and in my spiritual practice and in my healing practice, that's what I'm trying to purge is force. Mm-hmm. You know, like in my meditation practice, I'm, you know, there's like the goal of not necessarily clearing the mind, but of coming back to a single point again and again. And mm-hmm. so for me, I'm really wanting to take the force out of that. And like, instead of just like kind of, you know, being hard on myself or having like this harsh voice that I've been acculturated with be the thing that's there, being like, no, you have to do this. You have to be focused in this way. And like, you know, you have to, or, you know, something bad will happen. But having taking out that force and just like letting it, like letting the shift be easeful if it can be, and doing that, trying to take out the force in like all of my relations with other beings when I can see it, and I can't see it all the time. Right. Which is why, yeah, I'm really grateful for the plants and like for creatures that have not forgotten that wildness. Because I think there's like, you know, in terms of force, there's like protective force that we may need to use for ourselves. Like if there's like a danger coming directly, you know, if like someone is trying to harm us, like in that moment, right. You know, there's like the force of protection. And that's one thing. But I think like the force of like forcing ourselves to like embody, you know, ourselves as like, you know, in the script of whiteness, or like, you know, trying to force the world to fit our needs and like produce certain materials so that we can maintain our life, you know, lifestyle that we're used to, or like forcing another person to do whatever that you want them to, you know, those are the times that I'm like, okay, that's like the force of domestication. Like how right. can we redirect towards this wildness so we can continue to purge out the violence that we've been, I mean, it's been thousands of years, so it's a really, right. it's a really long job, you know?
Right. Many lifetimes, but yeah. Yeah. And it really, for me, it also brings me back to like trying to establish a relationship with plants, you know, and for me, like the establishing this relationship with mugwort in my own healing journey just felt like a way to, it feels like a completely different relationship than maybe working with a doctor or working with even like my acupuncturist. It's really, you know, for me, it was really important to be working with this wild plant that is in my environment that I relate to. Just being, you know, having mugwort be, you know, I spend a lot of time hiking in the East Bay Hills, and mugwort is everywhere. And it's like having a relationship with it where I see, oh, little mugworts, you're starting to come up, and, you know, and having a process of like relating to them, smelling them, tasting them, you know, at different points as they're growing, really knowing, oh, this is the time when mugwort's really saying, yes, I'm in such abundance, I'm ready for you to come and take some, you know, take some of me home to dry, and trying to be in that relationship, in that like collaborative relationship also, where I can use my own senses to feel into, is this the right medicine for me right now? And yeah, I just really am connecting to the piece of the wildness, you know, and it's like really, rather than having the relationship of medicine as a product and medicine as something that you're told how to use, but how are we relating to medicine with whatever wisdom is in our bodies and ancestral line? And I feel like, you know, as someone who's like really know, my ancestors, I don't even know where all of the places that they come from through different kinds of diaspora. Some of my ancestors are from Scandinavia, some from Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico is like a place of like multiple diasporas, of like people having, like, and my family in particular came from the Canary Islands before Puerto Rico, and who knows where they came from before the Canary Islands. And it's just like multiple migrations where it's like, you don't even know. It's hard for me to even know what my lineage is, but I feel like my lineage is also in my own body. And how can I use all of my senses and awareness to tap into the lineage that lives in my body? And so this process of like doing foraging, like I think foraging, and then also like the, for me, fermentation, brewing and fermentation is another place to engage with wildness, because the bacteria are also wild. And so doing that kind of, not the kind of brewing that a lot of people do where they kill all the bacteria and then introduce other bacteria, but really how are we engaging with the wildness that is bacteria? I mean, there's nothing wilder than the world of bacteria.
Totally. It does what it wants.
it totally does what it wants. And then if you are up for it, you can get into a collaborative, mutually supportive relationship with it, you know, and be like, bacteria, what conditions would encourage you to make delicious things for me? You know, whether it's bread or sauerkraut or beer or wine, just like entering into that collaborative relationship. And I feel like that's similar with plants and foraging, and really, you know, establishing that relationship where you visit the same plant in the same place over the year and really know it in all its phases, and be entering into some kind of relationship of asking and receiving permission, and figuring out what's my responsibility. Anyway, there's so much, and I don't even have answers to a lot of those questions, but to just continue to engage with all of the questions of right relationship, reciprocity, collaboration, and being all, and, you know, being in a relationship with wild things, and also finding the wildness in myself that relates to other wildness, just feels like a really important piece for me of like this process of undoing and uprooting all that I have been taught under capitalism and settler colonialism and all of these structures. So
yeah, definitely.
It comes back to the mugwort for me.
Yeah, I relate. Yeah, I relate very much. And I love that it's like, it's doing all of that and holding us in all those ways and being our teacher and like being this touchstone to like the old ways while being like immensely pleasurable. Like I love how mugwort smells. Like I love it. For my birthday last year, my partner and I did like this wonderful scene with like a bed of mugwort, and I just got to like roll around in mugwort and just like rub each other with mugwort and just like totally just like breathe in and be totally ensconced in this wildness. It was like outside under a big oak tree and just like really, yeah, just like totally sensorially beautiful and like overwhelming, and also just like so touching. Like I felt it like permeate my being. And like we did that, we did this like wonderful, like beautiful, pleasurable experience with mugwort. And then I like bled that later that day, like just from the plant touching my skin. And I was like, oh my God, this plant is so powerful. They just rubbed it on me and now I'm bleeding, you know, like
I was
in the middle of where I was supposed to bleed. I was like, not supposed to bleed that day. But and for me, like, yes, like there's like the blood and like the ancestors and the old like ways of being that are like still embodied, you know, it for me is like such an immense like relief and like so heartening and so comforting and just so Like, I felt like just totally held by spirit and this plant and this world, and enmeshed in it, like interrelated in a way that I didn't know in my conscious being of this body in this lifetime was possible. And and yeah, to be able to do that through love and through pleasure, and like was so healing. And then really painful. The cramping was really painful. And they're like, you cramp now. And I was like, no. Yeah, there was just, it was so powerful, I think was what I'm really trying to get across. You know, like,
yeah,
there's a lot of really like things, you know, like the forces of capital and like white supremacy. These are all like, you know, seemingly intractable and like, you know, these massive monolithic, you know, or not monolithic, but like, just like you can't really destroy it. But in fact, it is still like something that kind of like the human body, it's both very strong and very like fragile at the same time. And so it's like, right, those forces, you know, are both really strong. And then here is also like this entity and like this way of being and relating that is still there and still strong and still helping us to remember.
Right. Right. And also to remember the sheer amount of force and terrorism that it took to suppress all of these things in the first place, you know, that for capitalism to have the ground to grow, it had to suppress this relationship that you're describing, this relationship of pleasure, knowledge in our bodies, reciprocity, that had to be so violently suppressed through the burning times, through all of the genocide against women that happened, not just in Europe, but all around the world, to destroy these relationships. So they are very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. I love that they couldn't destroy it entirely.
No.
The idea of like queers never die, like really, you know, it comes through for me. But yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great gratitude for you, and like gratitude for this plant, and like, yeah, just the ability to be in relationship and to remember. Yeah, just remember that that's possible and that there's magic, and that's there for us in our bodies and in our relating to each other and to the world around us. So
yeah. And also just to say about mugwort, is it is one of those plants that at least here in the Bay Area grows in such incredible abundance. Like, it's not one of those plants that you're like, oh, I'm just going to take a little bit, but it's like, it is so prolific. It's so abundant. It's just like, I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. I'm here in so many different places.
I shine in the moonlight.
I mean, there's other plants where, you know, I might have a more cautious relationship in terms of like, oh, I might just take a little because there's not that much. It's hard to find. But mugwort is not one of those. Mugwort is just like, hey, I'm out here. And it grows often in disturbed places, so it's super easy to find on the edges of roadways. And, so like so many other like beautiful, beautiful plants like dandelion. I've been establishing a little bit of a relationship right now with mallow that's everywhere.
Mallow is a good one right now.
Yeah. Yes, there's so many plants that are just like, hello, we're everywhere. We're here for you.
Yes. Do you remember us?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank goodness. Yeah. Springtime, you know, amidst all the things, you know, it's still spring. What's that, like that Pablo Neruda poem? Like, let's say you can cut all the flowers, but you can't stop the spring from coming. So, you know, it's still there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I really just want to thank you our time and our reflection. I feel like I could just keep going talking about footwear. Like, did you know? Did we even talk about it? It's like a flea thing. That was like a big deal when I realized that. But again, this period, I could just keep going. But I think that's a probably good amount for folks who are listening in. And where can folks find out more about your work as a Dharma teacher or your being?
Well, I would point people to East Bay Meditation Center, and the website is eastbaymeditationalltogether.org. And right now, in these times that we're in of sheltering in place, East Bay Meditation Center is doing all online programming. So there's something happening like pretty much every day. And I can't think what I have coming up, but I just think it's a tremendous resource. And that is the place where I teach most often. And definitely for transgender expansive folks, we have a monthly group, the fourth Monday of every month, 6:30 to 8, that is right now happening online. So you can access it from anywhere.
Which is so beautiful. I've been so enjoying being on those sits and like seeing people from all over the country join. That feels really magical. I have been finding the Tuesday sits, the LGBT, the queer, the rainbow sangha sits through EBMC to be incredibly grounding, resourcing in this time. I encourage folks to check it out. The way that you do that is you can go to the EBMC website and you can send, I think, an email to the you can like search for the event and then like there's a little email address and you send them an email and ask for a link for the Zoom and then they'll send you one back. And I should say too that all of those offerings at EBMC are offered freely, and which is an incredible gift in this time to be able to like come together with folks. And folks are needing resource to continue doing that in a way that's sustainable and feels good. So there's an opportunity to support the center, which I encourage folks to check out, especially becoming a friend of EBMC is really awesome because then you're giving however much you can, a little a month, and that helps, create the sustainability for the kind of spiritual community that we want to see in this world. And that can support the center, and that can, I think it's friends at EBMC is just towards the center, but there might be other links as well to support teachers. So I really encourage folks
to check those links out in the individual, whatever that group is. Right. Yeah. Thank you for providing all that information. Yes. I am a friend of EBMC, and I also really encourage folks to support EBMC. It's just an incredible refuge and resource for so many people, including me.
Definitely. Yeah. God is blessed, EBMC. And similarly, if you are listening out there and you're a fan of this podcast and want to support my work, I have a Patreon that's at Self Heal Herbs Mobile Clinic. So that also supports like the free clinic work that I do, supporting folks in encampments and in our communities getting access to free herbal care. And that also supports the work of this podcast. So if you want to check that out, that's on the Patreon website. It's Self Heal Herbs Mobile Clinic. Thank you so much for joining us and listening in. I hope you found something useful to take with you on your journeys. And if you can, go and rub your face in some mugwort and breathe deep. All right. Thanks, Renee.
Yeah, thank you.